Documentary Podcast. Today is Monday, January 27th, 2014, and you are listening to episode 87 of Building the Game, a Documentary Podcast. How's it going out there, ladies and germs? My name's Rob.
Lame.
I know. I'm going to keep on going, though. We're not starting over.
I'm Jason.
That's Jason. How's it going?
I'm Jason. He's Rob. You're the builders. What's up?
What's up, kids? Boys and girls, gentlemen and ladies, we're having a good night. We're having a fantastic night. We're revved up and ready to go. I mean, it's like game on today, man. Game on.
Wicca, wicca.
Wicca, wicca. How's it going? What's new?
Oh, it's just going pretty awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So we're recording this before Unpub.
Right.
By the time you hear it, I'll have already been there.
Unpub was great.
It was so awesome.
Oh, I'm so glad you had cigars. I wish I could have gone.
I don't know. But anyways, right now I'm just really, really stressed out about getting ready for Unpub.
Yeah.
it's not cool at all.
Well, you got the beat on the street, man.
I do, and I'm really excited.
You should be, because it was super fun. Because we haven't talked about this yet, but we play tested that.
Right.
And yeah.
We had a listener, I don't remember who it was. When we get to the comments at the end of the show, we'll talk about it. But one of the listeners asked if we'd do a video recording of it. And I kind of want to.
I definitely. We need to at least do an audio recording of it.
We'll at least do an audio recording of it, but right. I would love to do a video recording as well.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a game where if that ever is going to get published and it's going to go on Kickstarter, I think we require any reviewers that they have to, in their review, include an audio version of them rapping at least one rhyme from that game.
That'd be all right. I think that'd be hilarious. So apart from testing Beat on the Street, what you been playing?
That's honestly all I've been doing. Okay. I've been doing is staring at Photoshop.
Yeah.
For every night for hours. Mm-hmm. I've been getting a few different protos ready. The main two that are my big games that I'm going to have Unpub.
Unpub.
That I had at Unpub were the Beat on the Street and the Transylvania Trading Company.
Right.
The Beat on the Street, I'm interested in some feedback on that, but I'm really just interested in getting. I want to see people get excited about it. You know what I mean? That's what I hope that I get out of that one.
Yeah.
Only because I feel like as it plays, it's not a complicated game. It's a simple game. It could probably use a few tweaks, but I don't think there's tons and tons of feedback to be had on that.
Mm.
Maybe people will have some new sick rhymes for me to throw in there, right?
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
So, but in addition to that, you know, with Transylvania, I want a lot of feedback. That hasn't had a lot of testing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it's in a place where I can get a lot of good testing in at Unpub. And I really hope that I get a lot of good feedback on that. You know, not necessarily good feedback, but any feedback that'll help me make the game better.
Any feedback
is
good.
You know, and that's a game that I'm taking because everybody's responded so positively to the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of surprised me because I thought the theme was kind of silly, but so many people just kind of latched on and really liked the theme.
It's just kind of a charming theme. It's like it's funny and it's familiar and it's different and it's funny. And it's when you say, oh, well, you're buying and selling commodities and goods and a caravan, people go, oh, okay, that's neat. And they say, and sometimes you get a werewolf and people go, whoa, you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, because of that, that game kind of helps, you know, stick out to me and force me to keep working on it.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of happy with where I'm at. So I'm just really hoping to get some lots and lots of feedback on that one.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. Yeah. What, have you been playing some stuff?
No, not really. I've been busy.
Deadbeats.
I know.
We're
terrible human beings and terrible podcast hosts.
Well, you've been working on.
I've been working Water Balloon Washout Cards, yeah. I did just recently get in the mail, though, Zombie House Blitz by Jeremiah Lee.
I did as well.
Just showed up in the mail this past week, and we haven't played it yet, but I'm thrilled to get it. My wife loves Dutch Blitz. It is pretty much her favorite game of all time. So looking forward to getting that to the table very, very soon.
Yeah, and it looks like a lot of fun. It looks really nice.
Yeah, it sure does.
Which makes me happy because they printed at Delano, which is where we're printing Water Balloon Watchout. So when I saw that, I was like, all right. Well, look at Twitter questions coming in as we talk.
Put your phone on silent, man. We're recording, okay?
Dude, it's Twitter questions,
yeah,
man.
But put your phone on silent, okay? We're recording.
This question's great.
All right, go ahead and read the question
I'm not going to read the question right now.
Oh, come on. You can't do that.
It'll be later in the show.
Put your phone on silent.
I did.
Thank you. Now it's on the hardwood, so it's going to buzz instead.
Yeah.
All right.
Listeners know we're popular.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of being popular, the challenge is still out there.
Yeah.
We can get 1,000 followers on Twitter. We got since the last time we've recorded, we've gotten almost 100 followers.
Holy cow.
So we're pushing like the high 600s now.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah. So, hey.
Hey, builders, you're awesome, guys. Yeah.
We've got a cool game to give away. It's a bigger game.
Mm-hmm. A lot of components.
Yeah, lots of components.
Lots of components in this game.
Yeah.
It's a dense game, a heavy game.
Yeah. It's in a big box. It's from Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. It's still sealed, actually.
We're not going to say what it is, though. We're gonna
teasing
what it is.
But when we get to 1,000, we'll do some sort of contest to give it away.
Yep, and you're going to love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and the contest will be awesome, because all our contests are awesome.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the feature of the week.
Oh!
What's our feature of the week?
All right. Well, I have to thank Ben Pinchback for this feature of the week. Thank you, Ben. I know Ben is a builder out there who's listening to the show.
Yeah.
He a couple weeks ago was on
Something from Nothing.
Something from Nothing with us, and he was a great guest panelist. Mm-hmm. And
I had a kind of a whiny comment where
you were like,
and I feel bad about that. Like, I kind of brought the mood down, and I felt bad about it ever since. But
people are like, this is so fun. I love being on this hangout. And then you said.
I said, gosh, guys, I was so gung-ho with working on stuff, and then the holidays came, and now holidays over, and now I'm just kind of, I'm having trouble getting motivated to get back into game design and getting really going on something again. And Ben said...
Well, so first of all, then the whole mood was like...
Everybody went, we're all depressed now. Thanks, Rob.
Because Rob said it in a super depressing way.
Rob's an idiot and a jerk and a whiner.
That's a moment where I thought about texting you. Being like, what are you doing? If you ever watch Something from Nothing, sometimes you'll see Rob get text messages and look at his phone and sometimes smirk. Those are usually for me saying something offensive, trying to make him laugh while we're recording the show.
Yeah, because you're a jerk. Anyway.
Anyway, so Ben Pinchback said, hey, you guys should try and design, like co-design something together. Ben Pinchback, of course, him and Matt Riddle, designers of Fleet and Fleet-related products, as T.C. Petty likes to always say. And because of that... They're co-designers. I mean, they pretty much design everything that I understand as co-designers. And it's funny because when I say co-designers, I mean, like, the published game has both their names on it, right?
Yeah.
You and I have never done that.
No.
Which is funny because we design together all the time.
Right. But then we leave and we keep going on because generally the ideas that we work on are ideas that started on our own, and then we bring the idea to the show to talk about together, and then we take the idea back home with us to continue to work on. And I mean, throughout the process, we're still bouncing ideas off each other, but we still kind of feel because the idea germinated or was born kind of separately on our own, we still kind of treat that as an exclusive idea.
Well, and even too, I mean, some of the ideas that have come up on the show, I mean, one of us has said to the other, I think I'm going to work on that idea. Is that cool with you?
Yeah.
I mean, a good example is Scrapyard Cats.
Sure is.
You and I kind of worked on that on the show together more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And we at Gen Con last year, we had talked to Neil Roberts about it. And then Neil came back to us after we did it the last time. And Neil just kind of started designing the game with me. Like, I didn't even say, Neil, let's design the game. He just started designing it.
He just did it.
He was like, listen, here's how to make this game better. And he's right.
He was definitely right. Yeah.
So him and I started working on it together. And then you kind of said, you know, I'm going to step back because Rob's afraid of commitment and co-designing. He's a co-designing phobe. Anyways, so Neil and I kind of started working on it. And it was interesting because it was not like working with you. And that was because we were co-designing, and I decided that early on. I was like, all right, dude, if you're doing this, your name's on there, we're doing this together. And he said, okay. And, we came to a couple impasses where, like, he's like, I think we should do it this way. And I'm like, I really think we should do it that way. And we both believe we had the best solution for what the game needed. And that's tough when you're co-designing.
Yeah.
And I think a solution to that, right, is to get feedback from other people. Right?
Yeah.
To do play testing.
Right.
We're trying to hit that Dice Hate Me challenge, so we didn't have a lot of time for that. We had to do like a lot of design. We had to do all our own play testing, basically.
Yeah.
Well, the problem was, and I think this is a really good thing to watch out for in co-designing, from my limited experience,
is the
idea of confirmation bias, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the idea is if you expect a certain result, you tend to get that result. It's a whole science thing. Look
sure.
It up. Confirmation bias, Wikipedia. He would be testing, believing it was going to work his way, and I was testing, believing it was going to work my way, and guess what? It came back, and it did.
Yeah.
So to help that, he grabbed another playtester and let them play on their own a bit. He played with them, then let them play on their own. And they came back, sometimes confirming him, sometimes confirming me. And that was kind of like our deal breaker. They're like, oh, great. Like, there's the tiebreaker. We've got that. You know, we know.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple times I just conceded. I said, you know what? Let's do it your way. And a couple times he just conceded and said, you know, he said, fundamentally, I don't think this changes the game that much, but you seem to think it makes the game better. So let's do it that way. You know, I mean, and I think that you need to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you and I never have that issue because you might say, no, Jason, I really think you should do it this way. And I can say, well, it's my own design, so screw off.
Yeah, see, and that's why I kind of like the relationship and the interaction that we have right now because if I'm really passionate about a game so much so that I really want to take it beyond this conversation that we have on the show, you know, but I mean, I still want to talk to you about it. And actually the game I'm going to pitch later in the show, is one of these kinds of things where if I feel like you're making a suggestion about the game, while your suggestion is not necessarily a bad suggestion, but maybe it doesn't agree with the vision or the tone that I'm imagining for the game. I feel okay saying no. No, I don't even want to consider that.
Right.
It's not always, but sometimes I feel like if it's a fundamentally contrary to what my goals are with the game, then I feel okay saying, no, I don't want to even think about that right now. That would change too much of it. But if we were co-designing, I would feel like we had to explore all those avenues, which maybe is a great thing.
Right.
But it's a totally different experience.
Right, right.
That I'm just not accustomed to.
Yeah, I mean, I can't count the number of times that one of us has said, like, actually, the game you're going to pitch today.
Right, that happened
today,
earlier today.
I said, I came over to your desk and was like, no, dude, I have the perfect way to fix your game. Do this. And you're like,
no.
That doesn't fit with my vision. You're like, good idea. It doesn't fit with my vision.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's a different game. That's not the game
and
that
so
I'm
making. And so I was like, what about this? Or what about this? And you're like, yeah, still doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
But out of that conversation, you then started thinking about how to do
Right.
And so it still helped.
Yeah.
But I think that's my biggest fear with co-designing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, because with Neil, it wasn't an issue. I mean, I think the idea of co-designing to me, and from our limited experience with it, I really feel like you have to sit down and write out a vision, right? Like, this is the game. This is what the game, we want the game to should be. It should feel this way,
yeah.
Right? It should be heavy. It should be light. It should be dark, you know, whatever. Whatever you want it to be. You should set that up ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
You should know that this is the vision we're going for. This is the theme we're staying in. And once you kind of have that document together, then you can start designing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe everybody doesn't need to do that. I think for you and I, that would be a big thing.
It would be very important for us.
Because for us, we differ on theme and tone.
A lot.
A lot, a lot. Even though, like, it may not feel like to you guys out there that we do. We do.
And even though we both, in the end, like a lot of the same games, the games that we want to make and try to make often are tonally very different.
Right.
Usually are very different.
Right. And what's interesting is I think in the last maybe 6 months or so, I've actually kind of seen a reversal. The games you've been designing have been a little more tonally heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Maelstrom or Aftermath. That you pitched,
right? Or Deified.
Yeah. And I've been doing things that are a little more light and fun.
Mm-hmm. Like Scrap-Eared Cats.
Yeah, you know, or The Beat on the Street.
Right.
You know, before that I pitched Paratroopers.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot more games that are just kind of lighter fare.
That's true. That's a good point.
And it's interesting that we've kind of come that far. Because when I started, like, I wanted my games to be...
Hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore games. Like, every game has variable player powers because I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of switched a bit with that as I've kind of changed the designer as you kind of grow, you know? So that's funny. Like, there was probably a point we could have designed a game together when we were crisscrossing.
I'm not sure when that happened.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that makes me nervous about co-design, when I think about working with somebody in a kind of a collaborative, creative manner, I kind of go back to the concepts of improv comedy, right? And you and I have talked about this a little bit before. The concept of yes and, where if you are doing a scene together in improv, you present something for the scene, and then I have to agree with you about what that thing is, and then I have to add to it. So, like you say, hey, it's sunny outside, the sun's shining. I would say, yes, and that plane's about to crash on us.
Yes, and look at that hippopotamus in a tutu.
Well, that's... sure, why not? So
you can't say no, it's improv.
but that's killing the improv. Anyway, so because I kind of approach that stuff in the same way, you always take it too far, or you just look at me and don't even take it anywhere because you're a jerk and you're terrible at this.
Yes, and I'm trying really hard.
But I would have a hard time saying no to someone's idea if I didn't feel like I had that control, or I didn't have that prime decision-making option. If I didn't think that the idea presented could maybe go with the tone of the game that we're working on, I would have a hard time saying, no, I don't like that.
Okay.
Because I approach the collaboration with that, you know, don't throw anything out. Don't ignore anything. If we're working together on this, we are working together on this, and everything needs to be explored. I would have a really hard time doing that.
Right.
Which is why I've shied away from collaboration on a specific game.
I think that's why having your kind of vision and tone preset,
you're right,
will help you with that. Because then you can say, well, it doesn't quite fit in with the tone we're looking for, but we could maybe, you know, turn it into something else. Because, I mean, there really are no bad ideas. Just because, I mean, there are some terrible ideas.
There's a lot of terrible bad ideas.
But a lot of those ideas could be turned into something that's not terrible. Mm-hmm. Maybe even something that's awesome.
Right. There are a lot of terrible ideas depending on the context. Anyway, so co-designing. That's the topic that we've been discussing here, in case you missed it.
You're listening, in case you just tuned in, you're listening to Building the Game. We're talking about co-designing here. Yeah. It's not a radio show, Rob.
I know. I'm just trying to kind of recap it in my brain or circle back around in my brain so that we can try and gain some better understanding or something of this topic, which is what we try and do. What have we learned from this discussion here? Or what can we take away from this discussion? That you're tired and you're yawning.
I did just yawn. You know, I think first of all, we should at some point try co-designing. Because why not, right? I mean, there'd be no easier person to try and co-design with than you. I mean, because we basically co-design. We just ignore the other person's ideas that we don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's... Right. I mean, so I think that it's worth trying, and I think that, you know, a lot of designers should give it a try, right? I mean, because it really, I can see it really helping to motivate someone, just because we talk about how the show motivates us to do stuff, even when we don't want to. We're like, I come up with a game idea, like, but I got to for the show, and then we're like, oh, I love this game idea, you know?
Right. Yeah, it helps. So, Ben's point in bringing up that subject to us the other night, to me the other night, was basically to, mainly is just to do something. Do something, change something to get your brain working in a different way. And on a fundamental level, he's absolutely right about that. And there's no reason why that could ever be a bad idea.
So, unless the way he said to do that was crystal meth, which would be a terrible idea. Ben, well, Pinchback, why would you recommend people take
crystal
meth?
Seriously, Ben, are you an addict? If it's okay, just let us know. We can help you get some help.
We can.
Okay.
We just know that the next time we invite you to be on Something from Nothing, it's an intervention.
No, it's not. No.
Oh,
no.
I'm sorry. It's not.
It's
we're just
not
here,
going to be an intervention.
We're just here because we care about you, Ben.
Right. All right. That's probably enough of that.
Yeah. Hey, you're going to pitch a game.
I am going to pitch a game. I'm going to practice my pitch.
And speaking of going in different directions, you're going to pitch a game about what?
Zombies.
That's the second one in a row, folks.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, so Aftermath, right? 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I pitched Aftermath, and it was my zombie game that was not about zombies, right? And I kind of kept thinking about that and thinking about other things that I could do with that. And in fact, this is going back to an idea that I originally was toying with a long time ago. And I had mentioned it back when our buddy Nate and his wife Jamie were visiting.
Yeah.
And we were having breakfast with them here in Kalamazoo. And I mentioned that I was, you know, just kind of offhandedly, trying to think of like a zombie racing game. And Jamie actually said, oh, like turtle racing?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that's an even better idea. So if anybody out there who doesn't know what turtle racing is, you get turtles. 2, 3, I don't know, however many you want. And you put them in the middle of a big circular ring, okay? And then you bet on which turtle is going to make it to the outside of the ring first. And you know, I don't know, is this circular ring 6 feet across? Is it 4 feet across? Is it 10? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not a gambler. I've never been to a turtle race, but I've seen it on an episode of House. Core. Yeah. And so you bet to see which of the turtles, gets to the, walks aimlessly to the edge of the ring first. And so I've had that bounce around in my head ever since. And so I think I'm going to pitch a game called the Zombie Racing League. It's, and it, I think it's set in the Aftermath universe because it's after the zombie apocalypse and we still have some zombies that we haven't killed yet. And, you know,
because racing,
you know, it, why not? What else are you going to do with them?
Because if the zombies are done eating people, let's just exploit them.
If it's easy to control them, you know, and then, you know,
zombie rights, dude, zombie rights.
They're dead. They're dead.
They're direction. It's, they're undead.
Well, it's true. They're undead. This is probably all under the table, hush hush, black market kind of stuff, you know.
Well, like turtle racing. Oh, yeah. Wait, that's cockfighting. Sorry.
Is turtle racing illegal? I wonder.
Why would turtle racing be illegal?
I don't know.
I mean, you're in no way harming the turtles.
I don't know. Are you? Are the turtles mistreated? Are they kept in poor conditions?
They're turtles.
In their terrariums?
Too. It's pretty easy to care for a turtle.
I don't know.
I mean, I think. I don't know.
Zombies require even less care, though.
I want a picture of you making a really dumb face, and I want to make one of those meme photos that says, hate zombie games, and at the bottom it says, pitches two in a row.
No one would think that's funny except for us, though.
But I would be laughing all the time.
And our lovable builders listening, but
yes.
Anyway. Okay, so the Zombie Racing League. Aftermath, colon, the Zombie Racing League. Each player is a zombie trainer. Okay, almost like a Pokemon trainer, except you've already caught your Pokemon. You've already caught your zombie.
Because he's slow.
I mean, it's not that hard to catch him. They shamble, you know? And when most of them are dead, they can't get you in hordes. So you've caught your zombie, right? And you now, you're an entry-level trainer in the Zombie Racing League. And so at the start of the game, all the players put their zombie pawn in the center of the board. And this board, it's a square board. It's with a grid, okay? And you put it in the center of the grid. And you have a D8, okay?
Okay.
You have a D8. And you're going to roll that die to see what your zombie does, okay? The beginning of the game, you're going to have four of the eight numbers on that die assigned to specific actions in the game, all right? If you roll a one, then your zombie is just going to stand there and go, brains, and just moan, okay?
Okay.
If you roll a 2, 3, 4, 5, excuse me, the zombie's just going to stand there and do nothing, not even going to moan. If you roll a 4, a 5, or a 6, let's say if you roll a 6, he's going to step forward one square on the grid.
Okay.
If you roll, if you roll an 8, because right, it's an 8-sided die. So if you roll an 8, he moves forward one square. If you roll a 7, he turns 90 degrees to the left. If you roll a 6, he turns 90 degrees to the right. Okay?
Right.
So you're rolling your die, and depending on what number comes up, the zombie is going to take some kind of an action. And those actions are actually pre-printed for you on a card or a tableau.
Right.
All right.
If you will.
If you will, a tableau. In a round, in a race, at the start, fundamental start of the game, everybody gets to roll their dice four times to see what their zombies do. These are all entry-level zombies. They're dumb. They're basically completely uncontrollable. Whichever zombie gets closest to the edge of the board wins that race, okay? Because right, at some point, people just have to call them because those zombies aren't getting anywhere.
Right.
Whichever zombie gets closest to the end, you win first place. And so you rank first, second, third, fourth, okay, depending mm-hmm. on how many players. And maybe there are some ties, and you just assign points accordingly. Okay.
Okay.
The winner wins a certain number of points, let's say 5 points if you win the race, okay? And you also get a cash reward.
Cash money.
Right. Second place gets 3 points. Third place gets 1 point. Fourth place gets 0 points. And you get cash rewards according that kind of correspond with your place. Now, and that's phase one of the game, is the race.
Mm-hmm.
Phase two of the game is training. You have to train your zombie.
Lift in some weights.
Right. you know,
bench press.
Exactly.
You know the I would say that the best kind of weights for zombies.
Jason? What are the best kinds of weights for zombies?
Dead weight.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
I'm done. That's enough.
Sweet. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. There are three stats that you can level up for your zombie, okay? First one is speed. The speed actually means how many times you can roll a die, your die in the race, okay? Your base level is 4, okay?
Okay.
For every 2 points you put in speed, you can roll your die another time during the race. Okay, so you put 2 points in there, you can roll 5 times in a race. Put 2 more points in there, you can roll 6 times during the race. So that allows your zombie to move across the board, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Second is versatility. This allows you to re-roll a die. All right? Now, again, in the base game, you roll, that's what you get, that's it. But with versatility, as you add points to your versatility stat, you get a certain number of re-rolls. You have to call it. I mean, you roll a die, if you don't like that result, then you say, I'm going to use a re-roll, and you can re-roll it. You only get a certain number. Right? Okay. And the last is power. This is the value that's assigned to the zombie's action. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. Okay. In addition to that, and you're spending money, you earn to level up these stats. You can also spend the money to buy techniques for your zombie. Okay. And a technique is going to be filling up those blank slots, those 4 blank slots on your D8. That right now, if you roll that, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
But you can buy additional techniques. These are going to be little cardboard chits or something that you would place on that tableau that says that, okay, and I'm going to buy another technique that is a forward or a step forward or shamble forward technique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm going to put that in the slot 3. So if I roll a slot, roll 3, instead of just standing there doing nothing, he's actually going to shamble forward one spot. Now, if I've also leveled up my power,
mm-hmm,
and I've got my power to a level 2, if I roll a 3 for forward, that means he's not going to just step forward 1 square. He's going to step forward 2 squares. Okay?
Makes
sense?
Total sense.
All right. Likewise, if I level up my turn left and I roll that at a power 2, he's actually going to do a 180, which maybe I don't want to happen.
Right. Yeah, because he could be going backwards.
Backwards, right. Now, another technique that your zombie can learn is attack. All right. And then the power determines the range of his attack. On a fundamental level, he can attack any other zombie that is adjacent to him. Right.
Okay.
But if you get a power of 2 or a power of 3, he can attack something range 2 or range 3. If he successfully attacks another zombie, somebody who's in range, that zombie gets knocked down. And for their next die roll, instead of rolling a die, they have to spend that die roll to stand back up. Make sense?
Makes total sense.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. You can't just buy any technique you want. There are only going to be a certain number of techniques that are available to you. Oh, I should say, there are techniques that are available are forward, turn left, turn right, attack, and brains. Sometimes all you're stuck with is the option to let the zombie just stand there and go brains and moan.
Right.
And the crowd loves that. They think that's really funny.
Classic zombie.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. So you can't just pick whatever you want. There's going to be a purchasing track. And every time we enter a new training phase, you have a pouch or a bag with all these technique chits in it. And you pull out 6 and you put them for sale on the game board. Whoever won the race has the option to buy first. All right. And then they take one off of the track, the 6 options that are available. Okay. So, I mean, if forward is not available, if it's not an option, then you can't buy it.
Right.
And then as that empties out, then it empties out. Okay. And you take turns buying, doing purchases. And that purchase list or the options that are available only replenish after the next race.
Okay.
Because basically the zombie trainer only has so many skills available to him right now during this training time.
Right.
You know, the coach, let's say, the zombie coach. Now, what if you lost the race? If you lost a race, you didn't get any points, and you didn't win any money. Then you get to draw 1 random technique from the bag. Which could be awesome, or it could be brains. It could be a turn left, and you don't really need any more turn lefts.
Right.
You know?
It's obvious, just turn left.
Yeah. Just kind of shambles around in a circle. So you get to draw one. Now, at the end of the training phase, you gear up for the next race. All right. Any techniques that you've purchased, you can slot them in onto your die tableau. Mm-hmm. Okay. You don't have to. All you have is a bunch of turn lefts and you don't even want to use them, if you just feel like, I'm not even going to worry about it, okay, fine. Don't even worry about it. Don't fill in the slots. Okay. You only use a technique if you want to. So this allows you to kind of customize to a degree what your zombie can do.
Now, can you swap them out?
You can. At the start of a race, you can swap out whatever you want.
Nice.
But not during a race.
Right.
Right. Okay. Okay, so the game right now, I'm thinking a season in the Zombie Racing League is 4 to 5 races, because I think they would all play pretty quickly. You know, again, that would be for testing to see kind of what.
Right,
what
and you could too say for whatever length game you want. You know,
I mean, exactly right. But that's basically the concept there. Now, I did want to add a shoot the moon option. You know, like in Hearts.
Yeah. Where you try and get all the hearts.
Right. In this case, or all the hearts. Right. I was thinking spades.
Because it's all the hearts and the queen.
And the queen of spades. Right. Okay. If you can get your zombie on every die roll to just stand there and go brains, then he becomes the crowd favorite, and they cheer him. And you get, instead of getting the max points of 5 for winning the round, you would get 4 points, but you would also get a corresponding financial bonus. Okay, so you can't full on win that way, but you can do pretty well. If all your zombie's going to do is just stand there and moan, the crowd loves that. That's really funny. Right. And you're still going to get recognition and people are going to appreciate that. You're going to get endorsement deals and that kind of stuff for that, right?
Yeah.
Because that's hilarious. And that's going to allow you to get back in the game a little bit. If you want to do that. So if you want to spec your zombie out to completely just stand there and do brains, say brains, you do that.
You could, because you're getting points, so that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, depending on what happens with everybody else, you could theoretically win the game just by standing there and saying brains. So at the end of your 4 or 5 races, whoever has the most points then at the end of the season is the winner. And that's basically the game.
I don't have a lot of comments because it's pretty solid where you've got it.
You and I talked about this earlier today a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a game that you should for sure prototype, because
I have to now.
You basically have the rules written. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's, yeah, it, you kind of need to prototype it.
Now, one idea that I was toying with that you and I talked about a little bit, and I'm going to say this on the show because I would like some listener feedback, builder feedback on this. I previously also had a stat that was called focus, and that would allow you, based on how far you upgrade it, to change the size of the die to go from a D8 to a D10 or down to a D6, or maybe even D4, and change the number of options available to you for the roll. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because the bigger the die, the changes the odds, or the different number of sides on the die changes the odds as to what you're likely to get, you know?
Right.
And I'm not sure how the math would really work out on that statistically. I mean, would it be better? And different play styles might say you would want a different size die.
Well, if I only had 4 forwards.
Right.
Well, but one is always
one
bad.
Is always going to be you devoted to brains.
It. So like if I had 3 forwards, why not do a D6? I mean, a D4, because, I mean, 75% of the time, statistically speaking, I'm going to move forward.
Right, right. So, you know, that's something that I would still like to test, you know, and see. But I guess to start with, I'd be really, really interested to hear what listeners have to say about that. If they have any feelings or thoughts or reactions to that concept, which I think could make it stand out even more than the. I think it's a pretty unique idea, personally.
Yeah.
But adding that in there is a real kind of strategy and math problem to it. Could make it a really interesting experience, and I'd be fascinated to see how people react to that.
Yeah, I think so too. One other comment I do want to make before we move on is. You said endorsements. I really like the idea of the artwork as being zombies wearing those suits that the NASCAR guys wear.
Oh, yeah.
Full of, like, patches and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, they would have to. Yeah, like fire suits from NASCAR, but they wouldn't be fire suits.
They'd just be, like jumpsuits, like janitor-style jumpsuits.
Right.
Like, the people who, like, mechanics, like, working on your cars or something.
Yeah, coveralls.
Yeah.
With patches all over.
Like, oh, that'd be so awesome.
Yeah, that'd be funny. So I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity in that for silly artwork and funny jokes and stuff. I also like that there's no cards in the game. You know?
Right.
That was something that I was very pleased with when it came to Maelstrom, that there were no cards in the game. And that's something that excites me about this too, is that it's not a card game. It's rolling dice, but it's almost like you're programming your dice, but it's still a die roll, so you don't exactly know what's going to come up, because you still don't exactly ever know what a zombie is going to do. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. They're unpredictable.
Right. So I think it's a fun idea. I think I'm definitely going to take this to the prototype phase, because I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's really silly and fun.
I agree.
That's enough of that, though. You said that we have a lot of comments.
Yeah, so I'm gonna start with some emails here.
Do it.
I just want to give a quick shout out here. I've been talking back and forth with Matt from Mirrorbox Games. They've got a Kickstarter right now called Chaosmos. And we were just talking back and forth, and he wanted some feedback on the Kickstarter. I took a look at it for him, and I thought it looked cool. And man, they're like racking up the dough right now.
Great.
They're like 50 grand right now. I think when this comes out, they'll still have a few days left, so they may be way higher than that. I don't know, but they're funded, so that's pretty awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah,
to them.
It's good for them.
I'm always happy to hear about some builders succeeding on Kickstarter. It's mm-hmm. It's a rough place. So, we have an awesome email here from Palai. I'm going to mess your name up, but I'm really sorry. Palayo Besa. I really hope I got that right. I'm sure I didn't. I'm very sorry. Hey, guys. New listener and loving the show.
Thank you.
I just listened to the episode on prototyping, and you mentioned buying dice to use as counters and stuff. I don't know if you know about a Deal Extreme. It's a place in China. But it's a page in China where you can buy stuff cheap with free shipping from around the world. He said he gets like cables and stuff there, but also they have dice, and they have these little mini dice that are super cute. And they were like less than $3 with free shipping.
Wow.
So if you're looking for mini dice, especially, just check it out. The website is, dx.com. So yeah, awesome. I thought it was pretty cool. And he, said, P.S., I'm from Santiago, Chile. You're probably your first listener there. So how awesome is that?
That's great, man. That's sweet. Cool. Thank you so much.
So we've invaded South America for sure.
Excellent.
And then I have one more here before we move on to the others. Speak of the devil, Nate Doherty.
Hey.
Hey, Nate. First of all, Nate was the person who said he would love to see a video of us rapping The Beat on the Street.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, he said, Jason, your Mexican train dominoes idea sounds like it could make a good pairing with the offset card system. Haven't heard about that in a while.
No.
Have you? Not sure where you'd go from there, but there's your thought.
Yeah. Nate also gave me some good thoughts on Aftermath after that show.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Nate.
And he also said, your discussion about solo games was interesting and a great way to bring back the Battle Box.
Yeah.
He said he asked Jamie to start looking for Boggle at Goodwill. but like he said, the game we described, the Battle Box, could actually be a solo game.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about it that way. You could throw some bad guys in there, too, and shake it up and have to deal with it.
Yeah, sure.
I kind of think that would be super fun as a solo game. So that was good thinking there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was thinking more about when I was editing that show, thinking back to it. It would probably not be terribly difficult if you were going to full-on produce that game. You could make a battle box that you could assemble out of chipboard, you know?
Right.
You know, it wouldn't have to be full-on plastic components or anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you want me to keep going with these?
I have a couple Twitter comments.
Sure,
maybe.
Go right ahead.
Hit those up real quick. We have, this is from, R-O-H-L-O-F-F-C. Not sure how to pronounce that, sir. I guess it's Roll-Off Games or something like that. Anyway, he says, does putting a game on a print-on-demand site like the Game Crafter hurt your potential of being picked up by a publisher? Well, if you were listening, last week we talked to Phil Kilcrease, and he had we were talking to him about Mobtown, Danny Devine's game, which is on GameCrafter. He also mentioned that Grant Rodiak's game Farmageddon was also on GameCrafter before Phil picked it up.
Plus, even if you want to include things like BGG, free print and plays, I know that Chevy's game Scallywags was out there.
Yep.
As was Jeremiah Lee's game Zombie in My Pocket.
Yeah.
Yep. And I know sometimes publishers will ask you to take them down.
Sometimes, yeah, not always. In fact, if you go to the GameCrafter, I think it's their blog in there. There are interviews and things that they do with some of their designers from their site where they talk about games that started on GameCrafter and had become published. So,
right. Some publishers like Phil left the alternate artwork he set out there for Mobtown for free, you know, for purchase at GameCrafter, because why not?
Yeah. So I don't think so. I don't think, you know, we're not publishers, but and I'm sure different publishers might have different reactions to that, but I don't think it's going to automatically discourage that.
Right. And I mean, I think that goes for big and small, because I mean, Game Right is who published Scallywags for Chevy, and I mean,
yeah, ultimately, if it's a good game that they want to publish, why wouldn't they try to publish it?
I mean, worst case, I think they ask you to take it down. I don't think it would hurt in any way. Mm-mm. There may be a publisher or two that disagrees with us, there's enough that would agree with us that I would say it's worthwhile to
put it out
there. It
certainly won't stop me from continuing to do that in the future.
For sure.
Yeah. And one other comment here. We had another comment from Seth Goslin on Twitter. He says, "Are victory points a lazy way out of fleshing out your theme?" Boy, that's kind of a loaded question, I think. I don't like victory points. I don't like that. I think that thematically that's boring. Kind of a cop out. That said, I just pitched a game where the win is based on points. You know,
you did
at the end of the season. But I'm thinking about that as in terms of win loss record, which is something that can be used to determine a championship. You know,
well, I think for me, I think you can use victory points. I think that you just need to make sure when you use victory points that you make it thematic, you know, like in the Beat on the Street, I use victory points basically, but they're called cred cubes.
Yeah.
You know, cause it makes it feel more thematic. I mean, I think that's all it is. I think, if you just say these are victory points, I think there's a better way to do it, unless it's a war game. And then you might as well just be victory points. Cause you know,
yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah. And then we had one more question here from, as my phone freezes while I try to read this. We had one more question here. My phone's still frozen. There it is. From Dr. Wixt. And he said, "What do you want from Board Game News?"
From an outlet that will provide news about board games, presumably?
Yeah, I want to know. I mean, I personally want to just... I really just want to know about new games that I don't hear about in other places. Because that's why I go to Gen Con.
Yeah.
And having that be more available... I know you can do that on just going to BGG and searching around, but certainly is easier when it's presented to you in a news format.
I guess my question is the news outlet, is it targeted toward designers? Is it targeted toward players? Are you going to try and cover all those things? It's geared toward publishers. I don't know, man. That's a tough question. Upcoming games previews and things, there's always a lot of places where you can kind of see that already. Maybe that's what I would like to see, because there are places where you can go to see upcoming game releases, and there are places you can go to see to read interviews with designers and publishers, and there are places where you can go to get tips and tricks from designers, places you can go to learn about print vendors. I would like to see one place that can kind of aggregate all of that stuff for all of those audiences. That's what I would like to see.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my opinion.
Cool.
And that's all that we've got for tonight. So thanks everybody for listening to the show. I'm not forgetting anything, am I?
I don't think so.
Okay. That's all we've got for tonight. So thank you again, everybody, for listening to Building the Game. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with me or Jason or both of us, or, you know, if you just want to just send emails, because sometimes it's fun to do that.
We like reading your emails.
Yeah. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter. You can follow the podcast @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And don't forget that you can get a copy of the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking on the Game Crafter. You can find a link to that through the website. I should mention that I did get some updated box art for the game, so I'm a lot happier with how that box art looks now. It kind of looks like a textbook from the college instead of just a
nice
dumb collage image that I spent not enough time time on before.
Nice.
So I'm very pleased with the update for that. And you can check out Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video Google Hangout show that we can watch on YouTube every other Sunday night at 8 Eastern. Me and Jason and Chevy and TC will hang out together with some other designer friends and talk about design and whatever topics we feel like discussing. Look forward to an iTunes stream of that in the near future.
Coming soon.
As soon as we get that working. And you can come on back and hang out with us every week and get your build on. So,
well said.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game, episode 87. 87 on the 27th. 87-27. It's in my head now, so I'm not going to forget.